From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. On Friday, the U.S. Forest Service explained its decision to seek an exemption from the roadless rule for the Tongass National Forest. The agency published the information in the Federal Register. The Forest Service acknowledged it gave substantial weight to the state's policy preferences to be exempted from the federal rule. The agency also said this change would allow more flexibility in how the Tongass is managed. Austin Williams, an attorney with Trout Unlimited, doesn't think that justification makes sense.
What flexibility is going to mean there is that the Forest Service is going to have the flexibility to plan timber sales in new areas that it has previously had off limit.
A change in the federal rule could open up over 9 million acres in the nation's largest national forest. The federal agency says those lands would not be scheduled or expected to be subject to timber harvests. The Forest Service could not be reached in time to provide additional comments. Tribal governments have expressed concern over the impact the exemption would have on hunting and fishing in the region. According to the Forest Service's own summary of comments, most of the public said they wanted to keep the roadless rule in place. The Forest Service is accepting public comments now until December 17th. A final decision is expected by 2020. Delegates at the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention approved a controversial measure declaring a state of emergency over climate change. Youth delegates wrote the resolution that also included a task force focused on climate action. It was approved Saturday after more than an hour of heated debate. The resolution received strong pushback, particularly from members of the North Slope delegation. Crawford Pocotuk chairs the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation Board and said the resolution leaves open the possibility that outside interests could set the terms for resource development on indigenous lands.
Environmental groups, animal rights groups, these are the same organizations that come into our communities and try to split us all apart, split all the corporations, the tribes, the governments, because they have an agenda. And if they had their agenda, we wouldn't be able to hunt today. If they had their agenda, we wouldn't be able to develop the oil we have in the ground. That would cripple us economically.
Opponents pushed an amendment that would have included language sympathetic to fossil fuel extraction, something the youth delegates that authored the measure opposed. Quanah Potts is one of the measure's authors and pushed back on attempts to soften its message.
I am not an environmentalist. I'm an indigenous youth. I am indigenous, and we are not here to fight with our own people. We are here to stand together. This is a serious issue. I'm worried about our future generations. Like, we're crying up here. We should not have to cry to you guys. We should not have to come to you worrying about our future generations, our future children and grandchildren. We should be able to live our ways of life, to hunt. We are not environmentalists. We are indigenous youth.
Several elders spoke in support of the measure as well, and it ultimately passed. The last day of the convention also saw speeches from Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan. AFN co-chair Anna Hoffman was reelected to another term. Next year's AFN convention will be in Anchorage. On Tuesday, Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer certified a ballot measure that would increase the state's oil taxes if voters approve it. Now backers of the Fair Share Act have to gather more than 28,000 signatures to get the issue in front of voters. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rasha McChesney has the story.
If the Alaskans behind the campaign group Vote Yes for Alaska's Fair Share have their way, oil taxes will be on everyone's minds for the next several months. That's because they want to get enough signatures, 28,601 to be exact, to get their proposition on the ballot next year.
So that the citizens of Alaska can create a law about our getting our fair share of oil income from the development of the oil on state-owned lands.
That's Jane Engvik. She's part of the group sponsoring the initiative. Legally, they have a full year to get enough signatures. But to get it in front of voters next year, they need to get all of those signatures in 3 months. If they miss that deadline, it won't be on the ballot until 2022. Engvik says that means it's time for a massive grassroots effort to get signatures from all over the state.
So our goal is to, number one, get volunteers, and number two, raise $1 million to be able to wage our campaign.
Their campaign, that initiative, it's called the Fair Share Act. And it would raise the minimum tax and eliminate oil tax credits for the state's largest legacy fields. That's Prudhoe Bay, Kuparuk, and Alpine. It would also require all of the state's major oil producers to publicly report how much money they spend and make in the state. Kara Moriarty is the president of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. She says if this initiative passes, it will make investing in the state less attractive. She also said that an increase in taxes, while targeted at just the three existing largest fields in the state, will have a chilling effect on investment in new fields, because anyone wanting to develop a field in the state could eventually produce enough oil to get bumped into this new tax regime.
Make no mistake about it, every company in Alaska will be impacted. The sponsors can say all they want, this is not impacting the new field.
A legal analysis from the state's Department of Law also came out on Tuesday. It raised questions about how the initiative would be implemented and if it's constitutional. There is room in state law for a legal challenge, but Moriarty says her group is still reviewing that opinion and she's not sure that going to court is an option.
The attorney general says this is constitutional. It's just a bad piece of legislation.
Moriarty says that means her group is probably going to take their message directly to Alaskans. Anchorage-based oil and gas attorney Robin Brenna is one of the backers of the initiative. He says he expects it to wind up in court.
Most things involving $1 billion do.
Another way to keep the initiative off the ballot is that the legislature could weigh in and pass a similar law. But some lawmakers say they aren't sure there's the appetite to take up oil taxes this session. House Speaker Bryce Edgman says he's not sure if oil taxes will get bumped to the top of the agenda, but typically he says those discussions can take a lot of time and require cooperation between the House, Senate, and governor's office to be productive. Democrat Senator Bill Willikowski, a supporter of the ballot initiative, says he plans on introducing similar legislation in the Senate this year. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, I'm Rasha McChesney.
U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan does not usually criticize President Trump, but 2 weeks ago, he denounced the president's decision to withdraw troops from northern Syria. Now, Sullivan has softened his stance. He says he's learned more and believes Trump had no better option, at least at first. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Trump announced the initial troop withdrawal October 6, a Sunday night after talking to Turkey's President Erdogan. Democrats and many Republicans were quick to call it a bad move. Sullivan issued a series of tweets the next night to condemn the decision. He said it would allow Turkey to invade. Sullivan also called it an abandonment of our Kurdish allies. Then, late last week, Sullivan and other members of the Senate Armed Services Committee attended a classified Pentagon briefing. Sullivan says it changed his perspective.
Our military leaders were convinced that Turkey was going to invade with a major conventional force, over 20,000 troops. They were convinced that was going to happen, regardless of what transpired between the president and Erdogan on their phone call.
The U.S. had about 50 special forces in the border area. Sullivan says the president had no good choices. If they stayed, they'd be in harm's way. If they fought, they'd be attacking a NATO ally.
Or do you remove them for their safety? And that's what the decision was. So that was the initial decision, which is a tough decision.
But you've said you disagreed with it.
Well, I mean, to the extent to which they knew the Turks were coming, again, this is, you learn more in these briefings.
Sullivan remains critical of the decision Trump announced a few days later to remove 1,000 U.S. troops, essentially leaving Syria entirely. Sullivan says the power vacuum empowers Russia and Iran and risks another rise of ISIS terrorism.
I do think the calls to kind of say, bring everybody home, pull up the drawbridges, and that's going to make us safe. I think 9/11 proved that that's not the case.
Sullivan says he's not worried his condemnation of Trump's decisions will harm his standing with the president.
I have a good relationship with this administration, but to think that you aren't going to have policy differences on important issues, I think, is not realistic.
The Senate could vote this week on a bipartisan bill to impose tough sanctions on Turkey or on a House resolution condemning the troop withdrawal. But disagreements among Senate Republicans could derail both measures. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A man accused of torturing a woman to death and capturing it on videotape has pleaded not guilty in the death of a second Alaska Native woman. Ryan Stephen Smith entered his plea Monday in an Anchorage courtroom. He earlier pleaded not guilty in the death of the first woman. Authorities allege he captured the death in stills and video and stored the imagery on a memory card he lost. When detectives watched it, they recognized his distinctive South African accent. Authorities say one person is dead after a commuter airplane went off the end of the runway while landing at an airport in the Aleutian Island fishing community of Unalaska. The plane, operated by Peninsula Airways, left Anchorage around 3:15 p.m. Thursday. The company says in a statement there were 39 passengers and three crew members on board. The flight landed around 5:40 p.m. and went off the end of the runway. And finally, down in Washington State, students at a high school are building and using aerial drones in a high-tech extension of traditional math studies. The Skagit Valley Herald reports that students in advanced algebra class at Cedro Woolley High School are using Rubik brand drones to chart distance, speed, and create graphs. Students also work in small groups to assemble the drones before learning to fly them and collect data needed to complete their algebra assignments. Kathy Chase and Jason Dilley teach the new class, which is part of a series of courses offered at the high school incorporating the real world with principles of STEM, short for science, technology, engineering, and math. Dilley says students who complete the class will earn a career in technical education credit, as well as a math credit. Looking at the National Weather Service forecast for the Juneau and Northern Admiralty Island, tonight, mostly cloudy, lows around 30. Tuesday, numerous rain showers, highs in the mid-40s. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, October 21st, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.